Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 92.
Sun Wukong, Zhu Baji, and Xiao Wujing have tracked their master,
Tang Monk,
right, to Qinglong Mountain.
Qinglong Mountain, yeah. And the Suanying Cave, he's been captured. The scene is definitely set. Tang Monk's grabbed, and our heroes are right there at the mouth of the demon's lair. The uncertainty is, you can almost feel it.
So what's the immediate problem they're facing?
Well, it's a classic one, really. How do you possibly infiltrate a heavily guarded stronghold? Especially when you don't know the layout, you don't know how many enemies there are.
Or even where the master is, or if he's okay.
Exactly. Which raises that important question, what's your best first move when you've got so little information to go on?
And this is where it gets really interesting. Because Wukong doesn't go for the obvious frontal assault.
No, not at all. Everett, the clever strategist, right? He decides, I'm going in alone.
Uh-huh.
But he transforms himself not into some, huge warrior.
But into something tiny. Yeah. A flame bug.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Flame bug. And the text even says it was exhibiting power and light. So this wasn't just any old insect.
Why that transformation, do you think? What's the significance there?
Well, it's a perfect example of his 72 transformations, isn't it?
Yeah.
It lets him shrink down, become totally inconspicuous.
Right. Sneaky.
Very sneaky. This kind of subtle magic, it's often overlooked, but it's what makes him so unpredictable. He flies in, and the text even mentions this detail.
What's that?
That ancient texts refer to decaying grass turning into fireflies. It sort of underlines his powerful but almost invisible magic here.
So he gets inside. What does he find first?
He first finds several oxydemons just lying around, roaring like thunder, all fast asleep.
Lucky break.
Yeah, seems like it for that first stage anyway.
So he keeps going.
Yep, flies into the central hall, nobody there. He checks other rooms, and then he hears crying from a back room.
Ah, the master.
It is. He discovers Tang Monk chained to a pillar, just weeping.
Oh, man. What can we sort of take from Tang Monk's lament right then?
It's quite poignant, actually. It reveals a lot about his mental state. He's crying out, 10 plus years since I left Chang'an.
Wow, 10 years.
Enduring hardships of mountains and waters. Luckily, arrived in the western regions for a good festival, happily reached Jinningping for the Lantern Festival. But I didn't recognize the fake Buddha. Simply because of my destiny's misfortunes, my wise disciples are pursuing with great power. I only hope the heroes will unleash their full might.
Hmm. Such a raw moment. Shows his despair, his reliance on the disciples.
Absolutely. It really hits home that even someone like Tang Monk feels that deep vulnerability.
And there's that little detail, isn't there? He sees the firefly.
Yeah. He even says something like a firefly in January, which is, a bit funny given the season.
Right before Wukong reveals himself.
Precisely. And Wukong then quickly fills him in on everything.
Yeah.
Explains how Tang Monk's, failure to spot the fake good people in Jinningping
led to the monster messing with the lamps.
Right. Defiling the lamps, stealing that specific Suhexing oil.
That fragrant oil, yeah.
And then grabbing Tang Monk himself.
And Wukong also mentions how he found out where they were.
Yeah, he tells Tang Monk that he learned the cave's name, Qinglong Mountain, Suanying Cave, from the four duty deities.
Ah, those celestial helpers.
Yep. They gave him the intel. He fought the monster all the way till dark.
Okay, so Wukong uses his unlocking spell. Tang Monk is free. For a second there, it looks like the escape might actually work.
It really does. They start to leave together. Things are looking up.
But then, bam. Everything changes instantly.
And this is where, that unforeseen factor just crashes the party. It disrupts even the best plans.
What happens?
Just as they're walking out, the Demon King, who's presumably asleep in the central hall,
Suddenly wakes up
and calls out for his little demons to patrol, check the fires. It's completely spontaneous, almost accidental.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but it completely flips the situation.
And chaos erupts, right?
Mm.
The small demons stumble right into them.
Exactly. They're tired from fighting all day, finally wake up, and boom, there's Wukong and Tang Monk.
So Wukong just reacts instantly.
No hesitation. Whips out his staff as thick as a bowl, the text says, and just strikes. Kills two small demons right off the bat.
Wow.
Keeps fighting, knocking others down, pushing them away, basically forcing his way through several layers of doors.
And bursts out of the cave. But
he leaves Tang Monk behind, in the middle of the chaos.
That seems, harsh. But you said there's a reason.
Yeah, it looks harsh on the surface, but Wukong's decision to fight his way out alone, it's purely tactical.
Okay.
He knows he can escape. He knows he can get out and rally Baji and Xia Wujing. If he stays, they probably both get captured.
So it's a calculated risk, a strategic retreat almost.
Exactly. It's a cold, calculated move, you could say. He prioritizes regrouping to ensure the mission can actually continue, even if it means leaving the master temporarily.
And he immediately tells the others what happened.
Wastes no time, runs out, finds Baji and Xia Wujing, and spills the whole story how he got in, freed the master, got surprised, had to fight his way out, leaving Tang Monk inside.
Okay, meanwhile, back inside the cave, things aren't looking good for Tang Monk.
Not at all. The Demon King grabs him again, quick as anything, rechains him.
Oh, man.
And then threatens him, knife and axe, demanding answers. How did you get loose? How did Wukong get in?
What does Tang Monk do?
He's trembling, kneeling. He confesses everything.
Tells him about the transformation.
Yep. Tells him all about Wukong's 72 transformations, the disguise as a flame bug.
And the demon's reaction.
The three Demon Kings just laugh. They say something like, "Lucky we woke up. He hasn't escaped."
So they realize how close they came to losing him.
Definitely. And they immediately order the small demons. Tightly close the front and back doors and keep quiet.
Damage control. Secure the perimeter. Don't let Wukong know what's happening.
Exactly. A quick strategic adjustment on their part, too.
So back outside, the others hear this sudden silence from the cave.
Yeah. And Xia Wujing gets suspicious. He says, you know, I bet they're secretly doing something bad to Master in there. He urges Wukong to act immediately.
And Wukong agrees. The stealth option is gone now.
Completely gone. Wukong sees no other choice. They have to go in strong.
And Baji? He seems ready for this.
Oh, Baji is more than ready. He's eager to show off his strength, maybe fueled by some serious anger now.
What does he do?
He just lifts his rake with all his might and smashes the stone door to smithereens. Total opposite of Wukong's subtle approach earlier.
Wow. Talk about making an entrance.
Right. And then he yells, "Oil stealing thief, quickly send down my master. Direct confrontation. No more games."
How do the demons react to that?
They are furious, enraged. They immediately grab their armor, their weapons.
All three of them.
All three Demon Kings. They lead their horde of small demons out to fight. It's about 3 a.m., the text says, but the moon is apparently as bright as day.
Setting the stage for a big battle.
Instantly. The fight just kicks off right there.
And the matchups are specific, aren't they?
Yeah, the text lays it out clearly. Wukong takes on the one with the axe, Pihanduang.
Okay.
Baji faces the one with the saber, Pichinduang.
Got it.
And Xia Wujing confronts the third one, who has a large staff.
How's the fight described?
Vividly. First, only the sound of wind and dust. Then, colorful clouds scattered. Initially, it seems like a pretty even match.
So the demons are genuinely powerful.
Oh, yeah. Formidable. It really highlights their strength.
But then the tide turns again, dramatically.
It does, and quickly. One of the Demon Kings, Pihanduang, the one fighting Wukong, he calls up his small demons, brings in the reinforcements.
Ah, the numbers game.
Exactly. And this is where it all falls apart for the heroes. The small demons manage to trip Baji.
Trip him. Just like that.
Just like that. He goes down, and then several ox demons just drag him inside the cave and tie him up.
Oh, man. Baji's captured. What about Xia Wujing?
He sees his brother get caught. He tries a feint, you know, tries to create an opening to escape.
But it doesn't work?
Nope. He gets overwhelmed by the small demons, too. Caught, dragged inside, tied up.
So just Wukong is left.
Just Wukong, facing three Demon Kings and a swarm of smaller demons, with both his brothers and his master now captured inside. An impossible situation.
So what does he do? He has to retreat again.
He has to. He quickly uses his cloud somersault, his signature escape move, and just gets out of there. Leaves them all behind again.
Wow. Twice he's had to leave someone behind.
Yeah. Brutal choices.
And inside, Baji and Xia Wujing are brought before Tang Monk.
They are. And Tang Monk, seeing them captured too, is just full of tears. He laments, "It's pitiful that you too have also suffered this cruel fate. Where is Wukong?"
What does Xia Wujing say?
He confirms Wukong just left right after seeing them captured.
And Tang Monk's reaction to that? Does he lose all hope?
Well, he's clearly in despair, but he still clings to that little sliver of hope. He says, "Since he left, he must have gone somewhere to seek rescue. But we don't know what day we will be free." Sun Wukong, he's just been beaten, basically. He's heading back to Xian Temple alone.
Yeah, a tough scene. He's just lost his master, Tang Sun Zhang, and his two sworn brothers, Zhu Baji and Xia Wujing. They're all prisoner of these demons.
It's about as grim as it gets for their journey.
It really is. It's a rare outright failure for Wukong. But what's compelling is how he reacts, right?
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, despite the awful news, he actually reassures the monks at the temple. He's like, don't worry too much about the master.
How can he be so sure?
He knows Teng Sanzang has these specific guardian deities watching over him, like the Galan, the Jioidi, and the Dingjia, sort of the dedicated protectors.
Okay. The unseen bodyguards.
Kind of. And he also mentions that the master took the ginseng fruits earlier.
So even defeated, Wukong's still calculating the odds, thinking about these protections.
Exactly. He has this, you know, underlying faith in the cosmic safety nets, even now.
Okay, but then comes this really interesting bit. It's quite revealing, actually, to explain why he has to go to heaven for backup.
Right, he doesn't just vanish.
No, he actually tells the monks his backstory. He admits his whole mission protecting Teng Sanzang is basically penance.
Yeah, for his old troublemaking days. He specifically mentions wrecking the peach banquet.
The famous peach banquet incident. So he's openly admitting this. The great sage equaling heaven, admitting he's doing community service, essentially.
Pretty much. And it's a huge moment, isn't it? It shows this unexpected humility. What does that tell us about how he's changed?
Well, it's got to be a profound shift, right? I mean, this is the guy who defied all of heaven.
Exactly. For all his power, his, you know, rebellious past, he's acknowledging a higher authority now. He's on this path of atonement.
So he gets it. Consequences. Redemption. It's not just about being the strongest anymore.
It seems like it. He's operating within this larger system, taking responsibility.
Okay, so he explains himself, gets that off his chest, and then...
Then he's gone. Vanishes in a whistle straight up to the West Heaven Gate.
Yeah.
No messing around when the master's in danger.
Right. So Wukong makes a beeline for the West Heaven Gate. And who does he bump into almost immediately?
Tai Bai Jingxing, the Great White Planet. And the Growth Heavenly King is there too.
Okay, Tai Bai Jingxing. Is that significant? Like, did Wukong seek him out or is it just luck?
Oh, it's definitely significant. No coincidence. Tai Bai Jingxing is often seen as this wise old advisor in the heavenly court. A messenger. A diplomat, almost.
Ah, the go-to guy for intel.
Pretty much. Known for his wisdom, often the first to offer advice or, you know, clarify things. So it makes perfect sense. Wukong runs into him first. He's the ideal person to get the lowdown from.
And Wukong doesn't waste time, does he? He just launches right into it.
Nope. Full report. Tells him everything.
And it's quite a story. He lays out the location, Jinping Prefecture, Minshin County, near Tianzhu Kingdom.
Yep. Eastern border.
And the setup, Teng Sanzang's enjoying the Lantern Festival. Golden Lantern Bridge. Sounds nice.
Until you hear about the lanterns themselves.
Yeah.
Lit with this incredibly expensive Suhexiang oil.
Right. Valued at over 50,000 taels of white gold a year. That's insane for lantern oil.
Absolutely astronomical. Sets the scene for something big happening.
And then the trick. Three figures appear looking like Buddhas.
Teng Sanzang, being devout, naturally bows.
But Wukong's got his suspicions up immediately. His instincts are sharp.
Always. And sure enough, they snuff out the lights, grab all that valuable oil.
And the master, they just snatch him.
Wukong gives chase, follows them to Qinglong Mountain, finds their hideout, the Suanyin Cave.
And identifies the three demons inside. King Bihanj, King Bishu, and King Bichen.
But then he admits defeat. He tried to sneak in, failed. Tried to fight them, lost Baji and Wu Jing too.
It's a full-on catastrophe.
It is. But then comes the really crucial part from Tai Bai Jingxing, the insight Wukong desperately needs.
Okay, what is it?
Well, Wukong, in his report, calls them bull demons. Maybe because they seemed strong or had horns, you know?
Makes sense, I guess. Powerful horned creatures.
But Tai Bai Jingxing corrects him immediately. He says, no, those aren't bulls. They're rhinoceros spirits.
Rhinoceros spirits. Okay, why is that correction so important? Does it really matter what kind of demon they are?
Oh, it matters completely. It changes the whole game.
How so? Why would Wukong, with all his power and insight, get that wrong? And why is the type of demon the key?
Because it shows brute force isn't the answer here. You can fight a bull demon one way, but a rhinoceros spirit that requires a totally different approach. Their nature is different.
So specific weaknesses, specific strategies needed.
Exactly. Tai Bai explains they gain their powers through long cultivation. They can fly, walk on mist, all that standard powerful demon stuff.
Okay.
But then he gives these really specific, almost quirky details about rhinoceros lore. He says they love being clean, they hate their own shadows, and they bathe all the time.
Seriously. powerful demons worried about cleanliness in their shadows.
I know. It's such an unexpected detail, right?
Yeah.
Adds this layer of specific mythology.
Definitely. What else?
He then goes into this amazing list, like a whole taxonomy of rhino types, Ohis, Yol, all these different kinds, even mythical ones, like the sky-penetrating flowered rhinoceros.
Wow. That's incredibly specific knowledge.
It really highlights how detailed this mythology can be. And he says they all share certain traits. One nostril, three hairs, two horns, and this unique ability to open waterways in rivers and seas.
Open waterways, like control water.
Seems like it. And their names, Bihanj, Bishu, Bishan, aren't random. They relate to the noble energy their horns possess.
Okay, fascinating lore. But what's the key takeaway for Wukong? The actionable intel.
This is it. Tai Bai Jingxing tells him point blank. Only the four-wood constellation stars can subdue these particular rhinoceros spirits. On site.
Just those four. A very specific countermeasure, like a celestial silver bullet.
Exactly. It's not about general power. It's about this very precise weakness. A kind of Achilles heel, known only to celestial experts like Tai Bai.
Right. So armed with this critical piece of intel, Wukong knows exactly who to ask for.
Yep. He doesn't waste a second. Heads straight for the Tongming Hall.
Where he meets the four heavenly masters.
The administrators, basically.
And explains the whole mess to the top boss himself, the Jade Emperor.
And credit where it's due, the Jade Emperor acts fast. No hesitation. He just asks Wukong, okay, which troops do you need?
And Wukong, remembering Tai Bai's crucial hint, says,
the four wood constellation stars. He knows exactly who he needs now. Quick learner.
He really is. He processes that info instantly, so the Jade Emperor doesn't argue.
Nope. Immediately orders Zhu Tianxi, one of those heavenly masters, to go with Wukong to the Dunyu Palace and summon those specific stars.
Dunyu Palace sounds important.
It is. Seems to be where the constellations reside. And this whole sequence really shows the structure, the almost bureaucratic efficiency of the Celestial Court. Orders given. Specialist summon.
Like calling in the right department for a very specific problem.
Exactly. A well-oiled, if somewhat rigid, heavenly machine.
So they get to the Dunya Palace, and who's waiting?
The whole gang. All 28 constellation stars are there.
Wow, the full roster.
Yep. Zhu Tianxi announces the imperial decree, the official order, and four stars step forward.
Let me guess. Hornwood Dragon.
Dipper Wood Ox.
Pleiades Wood Wolf.
And what Wood Gulo. Those are the four wood stars.
Got it. And then Wukong has to get a little jab in, doesn't he?
Of course. Classic Wukong. He playfully ribs Tai Bai Jingxing, well, about Tai Bai Jingxing, saying something like, if I had known their actual names, I could have just come here directly, wouldn't have needed the Emperor's decree.
Typical. Cutting through the red tape in his mind.
Right. But the stars, they're having none of it. They respond very professionally. They just calmly remind Wukong that they absolutely cannot act without direct orders from the Jade Emperor. Period.
Sticking to protocol. Even for the Monkey King.
Especially for the Monkey King, probably.
Yeah.
It underlines the strict chain of command up there. Power operates within rules.
Okay, so the cavalry has arrived. The right specialists are on board. What's next?
Wukong gives them the exact coordinates. Kinglong Mountain, Swanying Cave, northeast part of Jijinping Prefecture. Precision matters.
And the stars are ready to go.
Well, almost. There's this interesting little moment first. Some of the stars, Dipper Wood Ox, Pleiades Wood Wolf, and Hornwood Dragon, they look at the situation and suggest maybe only one of them needs to go.
Really? Which one?
Well, Wood Gulo. They say he's the expert. He can eat tigers on mountains and capture rhinos in the sea. Sounds like he's the rhino specialist of the group.
Okay, that makes sense. So why would Wukong argue? He went to all this trouble to get these four experts, and now they're saying maybe only one is needed? Why push back?
That's a great question. And it shows Wukong's learned something crucial from his defeat. He insists all four must go.
Why? What's his reasoning?
He tells them, look, these aren't your average run-of-the-mill rhinos. These aren't just moon-gazing rhinos, whatever those are.
Right, not standard-issue rhinos.
Exactly. He says these are powerful, cultivated rhinoceros spirits. They have thousands of years of life. He's seen their power firsthand.
Ah, so he understands the magnitude of the threat in a way the stars, just hearing the description, might not.
Precisely. He warns them, if even one of you fails, if one rhino gets away because you underestimated them, it'll just cause more trouble down the line. He knows how dangerous these specific individuals are.
That's actually really insightful. He needed their specialized knowledge to know what they were, but his own experience tells him how dangerous they are.
It's a blend of celestial intel and hard-won battlefield experience. And Zhu Tianxi, the Heavenly Master overseeing this, backs Wukong up. He basically settles it by saying, look, the Imperial Decree specifically summoned all four of you, so all four of you are going. End of discussion.
Okay, orders are orders.
Right. So Xu Tianxi then heads off to report back to the Jade Emperor, mission accomplished in terms of summoning the troops, and the four stars are finally ready to descend and face the Rhinoceros King's Sun Wukong, facing a pretty tough challenge. He's outside this demon's lair, right? Which has been kind of hastily repaired after Baji smashed it up earlier.
Right, patching things.
And Wukong is not holding back. He's yelling insults like, you oil-stealing demon, give back my master. Classic Wukong.
Absolutely. And inside, you've got the three demon kings, the cold-averting, heat-averting, and dust-averting rhinoceros demons. And they seem, well, a little too confident, maybe, even though they kind of suspect Wukong might have brought back up.
Yeah, bit cocky.
Definitely. They order their smaller demons, you know, get ready for a fight.
They seem almost defiant, don't they? Even after getting beaten before.
They really do, it feels like. Classic hubris, almost. They seem to be underestimating Wukong's sheer tenacity, you know, and the resources he can pull together. So they march out, fully armored, little demons in tow, and start taunting Wukong, calling him a beaten monkey.
Ooh, bad move. And Wukong absolutely hates being called a monkey, especially a beaten one. You can just picture him, right? Temper flaring, raising that iron staff.
Exactly. It's like the perfect way to push Wukong's buttons. But here's where it gets tactically interesting. The three Rhino Kings and their little army, they cleverly form this circling formation. They trap Wukong right in the middle.
Yeah, it looks pretty dire for a moment. Mm-hmm. A really effective encirclement, trying to overwhelm him.
Totally. But then, bam, out of nowhere, four figures just appear, wielding their own weapons.
Celestial cavalry. These are the four wood constellations, Jing Wuhan, Jiamu Zhao, Du Muxi, and Kumulang, sent by the Jade Emperor himself because Wukong asked. And they immediately yell, you beasts, stop fighting.
And the instant these guys show up, wow, the rhino demon's bravado just evaporates, completely gone.
Total shift.
It's striking how fast they recognize, okay, we're outmatched here. The situation's hopeless. They're like, oh no, he's found powerful general.
Panic stations.
Right. They immediately tell their smaller demons, run, run for your lives. And interestingly, as these smaller demons scatter, they reveal their true forms. They're all different kinds of oxen, mountain oxen, water oxen, just scattering everywhere.
Oh. Yeah.
And the three main rhino demons, they also revert to their true forms, drop their weapons, and just gallop off on all fours like iron cannons, making a break for the northeast.
So the chase is on. Sun Wukong, along with two of the constellations, Jing Wuhan and Jiamu Zhao, they're immediately after them. No hesitation.
Well, pursuit mode.
Meanwhile, the other two constellations, Du Muxi and Kumulang, they handle the cleanup, basically.
Yeah, mop-up operation.
They sweep through the eastern valleys, the mountains, capturing or killing all those scattered ox demons. Mm. Efficient. Then they head straight to the Swan Yin Cave, where they free Tang Sanzang, Baji, and Sha Sang. Sha Sang recognizes them, thanks them, asks how they got there.
And this really highlights that strategic division of labor, right, among the reinforcements. This cleanup crew, let's call them, they explain, look, Wukong asked the Jade Emperor, who sent us to sort out these monsters and rescue you guys.
Makes sense.
Teng Sanzang, of course, he's all tearful and grateful, asking where Wukong is.
Always emotional, the master.
Very much so. And the constellations explain, well, the three main demons saw us, fled northeast, and Wukong and our other two allies are hot on their trail. We dealt with the rest and came to free you. Very practical deployment of forces.
And this is where Baji.
Ah.
Wow, his pragmatic genius really shines through, doesn't it? While Teng Sanzang is just bowing and bowing, totally lost in gratitude.
Yeah, endless bowing.
Baji stops him. He says something like, Master, okay, too much courtesy looks suspicious. Stop bowing. The four constellations are here because the Emperor ordered it and Brother Monkey asked. Now, the little demons are gone, but we don't know if the big ones are caught yet. So let's grab the valuable stuff from this cave, then wreck the place, burn it down, destroy its roots. Then we can wait for Brother Monkey back at the temple.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
It really is. What does this tell us about his priorities compared to, say, Tang Sanzang's spiritual focus or Wukong's just relentless pursuit?
That's a fantastic point. It shows Baji's grounded pragmatism completely in action. You know, Tang Sanzang is focused on the spiritual side, the propriety. Wukong's all about the immediate fight, the chase. But Baji, his mind jumps straight to the strategic stuff. Secure the resources, cut off the enemy's base, their roots, as he calls it.
Destroy the base.
Exactly. It's a different kind of leadership, isn't it? A very practical, sort of earthy wisdom. And it's absolutely crucial for the team's long-term safety and success. It's about removing the threat completely, not just chasing it away for a bit.
And the constellations totally agree. One of them actually says, Marshal Tianpeng, that's Baji, speaks wisely.
See, even the celestial generals recognize good sense.
They tell Baji and Shaoseng, okay, protect the master, take him back to the temple. And Baji and Shaoseng, they don't waste any time. They raid the cave, grab all the treasures, corals, agates, pearls, amber, precious stones, metals.
A loot.
They pile up this mountain of it outside, sit Tang Sanzang down safely on a cliff. Then Baji goes back in and just sets the cave ablaze, reduces it to ashes, roots well and truly cut off.
Mission accomplished on that front. So with that done, the two constellations who were helping Baji, they rejoin the chase, which is now heading towards the Western Ocean. They fly through the air, searching, until they spot Sun Wukong shouting over the sea.
Must have been quite a sight.
Yeah. They land, ask him, okay, where'd the demons go? And Wukong, understandably a bit frustrated, is like, where were you guys? Why weren't you helping with the chase earlier?
Fair question from his perspective.
But then they explain their vital role, sweeping up the stragglers, rescuing the master and the
Oh,
others.
right. The bigger picture.
Exactly. Wukong gets it then, realizes how critical that was, and thanks them. He then explains, okay, the three main demons, they dive into the sea. And Jingmu Han and Jimu Zhao, the other two constellations, are already down there, locked in this desperate underwater struggle with them.
Wow, taking the fight underwater.
So Wukong tells the two constellations who just arrived, okay, you guard the shore. And he himself dives into the waves. And what's really cool here is he uses a special incantation, parts the waters, and just plunges right into the depths.
Classic Monkey King magic.
Totally. He finds his two celestial buddies fighting for their lives against the three rhino demons. Wukong shouts, "Your old grandpa's here!"
Always makes an entrance.
The demons, already struggling, they're startled by Wukong suddenly showing up. They quickly abandon the fight and just sprint deeper into the
And
ocean.
here it comes, their ultimate, really unexpected escape move. The text tells us their horns. The rhino's horns are uniquely good at parting water.
Isn't that amazing? It's so specific. They literally use their horns to just plow through the depths, creating a clear path as they flee.
Like natural hydrofoils or something.
Exactly. It gives these particular demons a massive edge in an aquatic environment. They escape at incredible speed through the water, which would usually slow anyone else down. It's just a great reminder that even in these epic mythical battles, really specific, sometimes quite unexpected, advantages can completely turn the tide.
Sun Wukong, and he's with two celestial stars, Jinyuan, the Well Star, and Jiomuxiao, the Horn Star.
Right.
And they are in hot pursuit of these three rhinoceros demons, Pihunner, Pixuer, and Pichuner. Kind of similar names there.
They are, yeah. Pihan, Pishu, Pichin, easy to mix up.
And the chase leads them all the way out to the West Sea.
And this immediate escalation, it's fascinating because the West Sea Dragon King, Ao Shun, he's not just sitting back watching.
No.
No, his patrol, specifically a night patrol yaksha, those fierce aquatic
Yeah.
guardians, and a sea patrol attendant, they spot the whole commotion. They see the rhinos churning up the water, and they recognize Sun Wukong and the two stars chasing them.
So it's not just some minor squabble.
Not at all. It's a big enough disturbance that it immediately goes right up the chain, to the top of the Sea Kingdom.
So Aoshan gets the report. Does he like hesitate? What's his move?
Zero hesitation. He immediately sends for his son, Prince Moeng.
Okay.
He figures, look, these rhino spirits must have seriously ticked off Sun Wukong. Everyone knows the Great Sage's reputation.
Right, you don't cross him lightly.
Exactly. So he tells his son, gather the army. And we're talking the full aquatic forest turtles, armadillo lizards, fish, shrimp, crab soldiers, the works.
Wow.
They arm themselves, burst out of the crystal palace, ready to jump in and help. It really shows you how connected everything is, doesn't it? Celestial, mortal, aquatic realms, all tangled up.
Yeah, one disturbance, and suddenly you've got dragon kings and celestial stars involved.
Precisely.
So that sets up quite a trap then. You've got the dragon king's forces blocking the rhino's escape route in the sea.
Yep. Cutting them off.
And then Jingmu Han, Jiumu Xiao, and Wukong coming up behind them, cutting off their retreat.
Exactly. It causes total panic. The demons scatter, trying to get away any way they can. It really shows you it takes a coordinated effort to handle beings this powerful.
And then the first capture happens, right?
Pichiner?
That's the one.
Yeah.
Swiftly surrounded by the Dragon King's forces. But here's a key moment. Sun Wukong, always thinking ahead, shouts out a specific command.
What does he say?
He yells, "Capture them alive, don't kill them."
Alive. Interesting. So Prince Moraine's troops, they manage it.
They do. They flip Pitchener onto its back, pierce its nose with an iron hook. Sounds like a standard way to handle big beasts back then.
Ouch.
And tie up its limbs, secured, but alive.
It's really striking that Wukong, you know, famous for his temper, insists on taking them alive. I think it signals his intention really clearly. These demons aren't just obstacles to be obliterated.
Right.
They're evidence. They're proof. Killing them means no public reckoning back in Jintanping Prefecture, which seems to be what Wukong is aiming for.
Ah, okay. He wants to show everyone what was really going on. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But the next capture, it goes completely differently, does it?
Oh, completely off script. So Moang's forces split up to chase the others. Jing Muhan, the well star, he's back in his true form now, corners Pihan.
Okay.
Mm. Bites off Pehenner's neck and starts eating it.
Eating it. Wow.
Yeah. And Moang is shouting, you know, echoing Wukong's order, keep it alive. Keep it alive for Sun Wukong. Moang even jokes later that if he hadn't kept yelling, Jing Muhan probably would have polished off the whole thing. Pretty gruesome.
It's, yeah, quite a departure from Capture Them Alive.
Yeah.
What does that tell us about these celestial beings?
It's stark, isn't it? Jing Muhan eating the rhino, it's a real reminder that even these, well, divine figures can have this primal, almost untamed side.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely complicates the idea of them being purely benevolent heroes, adds this layer of, like, raw, wild power.
Definitely complicates things. Okay, so that's Pehenner dealt with quite decisively. What about the third rhino, Pishur?
Well, Zheng Wuxiu, the horn star, cleverly kind of herds Pishur back towards Jing Muhan.
Towards the rhino eater. Maybe not the best plan.
Huh. Well, Pishur runs right into the well star and starts begging for its life.
Smart move.
And this time, Jing Muhan actually listens. He grabs it by the ear, takes away its weapon, and captures it alive. He even promises, I won't kill you. I'll take you to Sun Wukong for judgment.
Huh. So one eaten, two captured, one very deliberately, one after a bit of begging.
Quite the contrast.
A very stark contrast. So the results get reported back to the Crystal Palace. One dead, two alive.
And Wukong goes to check him out. Yep. Sun Wukong inspects the captured rhinos, and the text notes specifically that he sees Pehenner died from biting, not from weapons. A little detail confirming Jing Muhan's unusual method.
Right. And then Wukong passes judgment, starting with the dead one.
Yeah. Very practical, if a bit grim.
Yeah.
He orders Pehenner's two horns sawed off, its hide peeled, the meat. That's a gift for the Dragon King and Prince Moang.
A thank you gift of rhino meat. Okay.
Waste not, want not, even in epic myths, right?
Mm.
And repaying the favor.
True. But what about the two survivors, Pehenner and Pishur?
Their fate is much more public and humiliating. Their noses get pierced, too.
Don't you again.
And they're basically put on leashes, led by Jim Mujio and Jing Wuhan.
Led where?
Back to Bijinping Prefecture. The order is to take them there to clarify the facts with the governor. They're going to be punished for, and this is the key part, years of impersonating Buddhas and harming the people.
So it's a public shaming. A parade of defeated false gods.
Exactly. Living proof of what really happened and proof of the pilgrim's power.
Very public indeed. So Wukong, the two stars still with him, and the two captured rhinos head back to Jinping. They meet up with the other two stars, Ku Jing and Du Muxing, who'd rescued Tang Sanzang earlier.
Right. The whole team's back together.
And I bet their return isn't exactly low-key.
Not Wukong style at all. When they get near Jinping Prefecture, he doesn't just walk in. He flies up into the air and shouts down.
Shouts what?
He announces to the governor, all the officials, all the citizens, hey, everyone, those rhinoceros monsters, they were the ones pretending to be Buddhas. They were eating the lamp oil.
Just lays it all out there from the sky.
Pretty much. Declares the demons defeated, their cave cleared out. And crucially, he tells them to stop the annual golden lamp offerings immediately. Says it's been harming the people and wasting resources.
So he's not just the hero. He's like a policy advisor now, too.
Yeah.
Fixing the local economy.
Huh. Sort of, yeah. He's addressing the actual burden this whole thing placed on ordinary people. It's quite practical.
And down in the Xi'an Temple, Pigsy hears all this commotion.
He does. Immediately drops the master, drops the luggage, flies up to meet Wukong, gets the confirmation.
And knowing Pigsy, he probably has an idea.
He does. Pigsy suggests, basically, let's throw the rhinos off the city wall so everyone can see them.
Throw them off the wall. That sounds, well, it sounds like Pigsy. A bit crude, maybe?
That does sound crude, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually pretty smart. In a way.
Also.
He understands public perception, you know? It's not just about winning. It's about making sure everyone knows you've won and why. It cements their authority, proves they're the real deal.
Ah, right. Visible proof again.
Yeah.
Show. Don't just tell.
Exactly. The stars even comment, like, wow, Pigsy, you're actually understanding logic and law now. He jokes back that he's learned a thing or two being a monk.
Pigsy, the unexpected strategist. Okay. So meanwhile, Tang Xinzhang is finally brought into the government hall. He must be relieved.
Immensely grateful. And Wukong gives him the full debrief. Everything from the initial investigation, how Tai Bai Jinxing identified the demons.
Yeah.
The Jade Emperor getting involved, the battle, how Du and Kui rescued him, the whole chase to the West Sea, the Dragon King's help. The full story.
And people of Jin Xinping, how are they reacting to all this, the announcement, the captured rhinos?
They are, understandably, terrified at first, but then just incredibly overjoyed.
I bet.
They immediately set up incense altars, start bowing down, worshiping the pilgrims and the stars. It's this huge wave of relief and reverence. Their divine status is, like, locked in now.
But the story's not quite over for the rhinos, is it? Pigsy steps in again.
Oh, yeah. Pigsy decides things aren't quite finished. He grabs his rake and just chops off the heads of the two remaining live rhinos, quick and brutal.
Pigsy doesn't mess around.
Nope. And then he saws off all four horns from the two he just killed. So now they have a total of 6 horns, 2 from Pihan or 4 from the other two.
6 horns. What happens to them? Are they just trophies?
No, Wukong has a very specific plan for them. It's actually fascinating how they're distributed.
Okay, tell me.
Right. 4 horns go to the Jade Emperor. The 4 stars take those up as tribute. Proof of mission accomplished for the Celestial Court.
Makes sense. Fulfilling the mandate.
Exactly. 1 horn is left behind in the Zhenping treasury. This is tangible proof for the people that the lamp oil tax is officially permanently over. A symbol of their liberation.
That's powerful. A physical reminder.
Very. And the last horn. The pilgrims take that one with them. It's destined for Lingshan, an offering to the Buddha.
Ah, connecting this victory back to their main quest.
Precisely. Ties the earthly deed to the ultimate spiritual goal. The stars are happy, they say their goodbyes, and head back to heaven.
So, demons gone, horns distributed.
Yeah.
I sense a celebration coming.
Oh, do you ever. The Jinping officials are just overflowing with gratitude. They threw these huge, lavish vegetarian banquets for the pilgrims.
Just one banquet.
No, no. They invite all the local gentry, the wealthy families, and it goes on for over a month.
A month of feasting.
A solid month. It's this massive extended celebration of their liberation. But, you know, this much celebrating, it becomes its own kind of test for our heroes.
How so?
Well, the whole prefecture changes. They put out official notices, stop the lamp offerings, exempt the big oil suppliers. They make armor from the rhino hides, distribute the meat to officials. They even build temples for the 4 stars.
Wow. They're really going all out.
And they erect living shrines for Tang Xinzhang and his disciples. Shrines where people can worship them while they're still alive, with stone tablets praising their benevolence. It's an incredible outpouring, but also potentially a massive distraction.
Right. And I bet one member of the group is enduring this distraction immensely.
You guessed it. Pigsy is having the time of his life, feasting day after day. This is his paradise.
He probably never wants to leave.
Pretty much. The text even mentions he pocketed some treasures from the demon's cave to give out as gifts at all these banquets. He's fully settled in.
But Tang Xinzhang, he's probably starting to get twitchy.
Exactly. After a while, the elder starts getting really concerned. All this feasting, all this comfort. He's worried it's delaying the pilgrimage, that it will displease the Buddha.
The core mission versus earthly rewards.
That's the tension right there. He sees the danger in getting too comfortable.
So he decides it's time to go.
Yes. He pulls Wukong aside and gives him instructions. Give the leftover treasures to the monks at the Sayun Temple as a thank you.
Okay.
And then they need to leave, quietly, before dawn. He specifically says it's lest they keep indulging in pleasure and delay the scripture acquisition.
Sneaking out after being celebrated for a month, Pigsy must have loved that idea.
Oh, he was furious. The text says he'd feasted at over 30 of the 240 wealthy households who'd invited them. He starts grumbling, what? We have to be hungry again. He really does not want to leave.
Classic Pigsy. How does Tang Xinzhang handle that?
He doesn't mince words, snaps at Pigsy, calls him a clumsy oaf, and basically threatens him with a beating from Wukong's golden cudgel if he doesn't get moving.
Ah, the ultimate motivator for Pigsy.
It works like a charm. Fear the cudgel gets Pigsy up immediately.
So they manage to slip away.
Yeah. Before dawn, the whole group leaves the Sion Temple quietly. No farewells, no fanfare, just gone.